morning. Welcome to another edition of She Persisted here on the Progressive Voices Network. My name is Melissa Carter. How are you? Landscapers are here today. So I don't know if you can hear them, but if you can, you understand. We're all doing this together. We're working from home, or those of us who are working from home. If you're not, you at least probably have worked from home. But it's the quiet workspace, or the quiet learning space, as my son's school calls it. So Mr. Carter does remote learning. Where do I even begin? But just this week, it's been the struggle with finding the perfect workplace in the house. Even though I've been doing this since March, you know, what I do for a living has to do with visual and audio stuff, as well as the remote learning, right? So I do this podcast, and I should be in a soundproof room, but I have parked everything in the dining room because that's where the internet is. Like, near the way that my home is configured is the internet is in the front room, and so for some of the stuff I have to do, I need Ethernet, and I'm kind of tethered to the front room because I don't have a box anywhere else. Okay, so now look, I consider myself pretty geeky, pretty technologically, at least now, average. I think before I thought I was above average, and now I think I'm just average because I'm slowing down the pace of keeping up with technology. I had a conversation with Mark Hayes, who if you're in Atlanta, familiar name. He was on Fox 5, and he is also one of the co-hosts of a show I do online called Smart Talk. We were discussing that in Smart Talk because I said I'm in my dining room, and so I'm even now having to figure out how to do a background. I'm telling you, hopefully you can relate to all this. So, because with Smart Talk, it's visual, and I've lived my career in radio and not television. It's a new concept for me to have to figure out lighting and background. Araya McGarry, who's also on the show, she suggested the lighting that I get. So I purchased the lighting. And then with a virtual background, if you do Zoom or anything like that, you can do these virtual backgrounds. But the problem is, and I've learned, if you have any space behind you, if it's an open space or if it's a wall that has something on it, that is why those backgrounds tend to bleed into you. But if you have a flat wall, which I've tried before in another room with a Zoom, that rhymed, the background lays flat and it doesn't kind of bleed over into your hair or into your hands. But it's still, I mean, if you watch Smart Talk and it's Wednesdays at noon, you can find it on my Facebook page or YouTube. When I talk, when we're doing the show and I talk, I tend to use my hands in front of my chest because I'm fully aware of the fact that I've got this virtual background that because I talk with my hands, and if I use my hands outside of my body, that is when you hear the landscapers, but you see the background kind of bleed into what I'm doing. So I've been like, what do I do? So Mark Hayes was telling me about an internet booster, because I said, since I'm in the house and I've had my kidney transplant, I can't have somebody come in the house. I can't have like workers come in. I mean, I just am being very safe and I don't let anybody in the house except my son. And I can't figure out a way to get more internet into the upstairs office where I ideally would be able to soundproof and not hear the landscapers and to not have an echo and, you know, all these things. And so he said, oh, well, they've got things now where you can, you know, boost your internet and be able to plug your Ethernet in and not have to have the cable company, the internet company come out. And so he sent me a link to the equipment and askmelissacarter@gmail.com. If you have any, you know, need for a reference of what I am talking about or what I get, I purchased that. I haven't gotten that yet. So I'm still in the dining room, but I'm hoping to be like in the upstairs space. Now, you know, here we are in October and I'm just now figuring it out. But I think it's because we all have just tried to wonder what the future holds, right? So in March, when I was working and I was working from home and it was audio production and I had to be tethered to the Ethernet, I was in the dining room and it, you know, and I had big styrofoam, like I used one of those presentation boards, you know, that folding cardboards, and I put some soundproofing stuff in, and I had it over the mic and tried to be as professional as possible. And it worked, but it was like, I'm just putting something together because I'm only here for a couple months. Well, and then I got laid off, and I thought, well, this is an opportunity to work for myself. And so now that that has taken place, it's like, oh, well, then I really do need to take what is my office and the junk room. I don't know if you have a junk room in your house, but the office traditionally has been mine. And so I got to clean that out. And anyway, now the issue is the background. Now, with my son's school, I don't have a background for him. It's just, I kind of put a Halloween pumpkin up behind him in the dining room. So there's some kind of decoration behind him, but it's, you know, I don't do a filter or a background for him. But now that I've got this, or I'm going to get this thing that boosts the internet, then he can do remote learning in his room, just like I can do what I'm doing in my office upstairs. And that way we can be in two separate places and I can set up two different setups. Anyway, so I'm still trying to figure it out. I don't know about you. So that's what's going on. And then here we are with the landscaper. So I hope you're doing well. So that it's more of the laughing at myself that I didn't know that there was something I could have been doing this whole time with boosting my internet. The background, still not figuring that out because I don't want to do a virtual background. So somebody else I know that does a lot of online shows got a real background. And so I've been looking those up and it's like, you know, real background with the, you know, you have to also buy something to hang it up with. And so I'm considering that. So this is all new. The visual aspect is all new to me. Having to put on makeup and stuff. I mean, I wore makeup to work. I mean, I traditionally wear makeup, but since I've been home, I haven't dipped into it too much. I've even tried to update, like, are there new styles of putting on makeup? So I've even looked online for that. So it's really funny how this has sparked a new awakening to where I'm learning new things and changing the course of my career and my life. And I think to me, the pandemic has been an opportunity to do that. But I'm excited that we have a guest today and we're going to talk about those very things because Kim is just a delight to talk to. And Kim has such an impressive resume. So Kim Dobrin is our guest today. I could spend the whole show talking about the things that she's done. She's from South Africa, is a best-selling author from South Africa. She now lives in the United States. But when she was in South Africa, she also was the founding director of the Apartheid Museum. And she is the co-founder and CEO of Free the Mind, which helps transform thought patterns and helps with your emotional intelligence, which, of course, is then going to transcend, you know, any issues that you have and make you more successful in whatever you want to do. I mean, she is just so impressive and I can't wait for you to get to know her. Now, before I bring Kim to the show, I just want to let you know when we started talking, it was just natural. We had met through the networking group, What Women Want, and I invited her on the show. So we got on the call and we started talking and there wasn't really a cut where I started the interview. I mean, it was just our conversation flowed. That's just kind of the vibe she gives out. She's just so easy to talk to. So Kim Dobrin is joining the show now, but it's going to be in mid-conversation because we were talking about transcendental meditation. And this is how it began. So Kim Dobrin, welcome to the show.
And I'm learning so much about the American Indian journey and they had cities set up. I mean, these weren't just nomads running around America. Right. They had cities with spiritual practices and rituals and phenomena. And I saw yesterday, I actually wanted to cry. He met one of the leaders, one of the chiefs, and they had this whole spiritual connection going on. It was just remarkable. But to your point, you know, his whole thing is, he says, you know how to do this, you know how to create the iPhone, you know how to do everything externally from you, but you don't know how this works. And this is the greatest machine ever, but you don't even know how to work it.
You're exactly right, because that's what I found as I've gotten older. So like my background is I have done media my whole life, but on a personal level, I was kind of a sickly kid. I was kind of a runt. I was that, and that was my self-perception, right? So my body didn't seem to work very well. Like I had a lot of intestinal issues, and then my kidneys started failing in my 20s.
Oh, wow.
And I was told at 27 that if I didn't have a kidney transplant, then I was going to die. In any other time in our history, I would have been dead by 30, right? So I was able to get a kidney transplant. Learning about the body, or appreciating the body is a better way to put it. Of course, I learned about the body. You learn about the body in biology. But I think that undergoing the feeling of dying, because it truly, my kidneys failed to the point that I had the instinct. So the crazy thing is there's a part of you that tells you this is bad. Like your body is always giving you signals. So your body's always telling you something. And I learned that, you know, I appreciated that in after the fact. But your body's always communicating with you. But I remember it was Thanksgiving and I was laying in bed watching television and I was by myself because I was too sick to go home. And my girlfriend was gone to see her family. So I was laying in bed and I just knew my body was telling me that this is different. This is bad. And you need to call the doctor. Like, cause I was told, I already knew that my kidneys were failing, but it was like, we're going to wait to put you on dialysis until they're close to gone. And so when my kidneys were close to gone, it was a different sensation. I've never experienced it before. And it wasn't necessarily something I panicked at. It felt thick. It was like a thick communication experience of I'm dying. I really am dying. The fact that I got to experience that and then have the transplant, recover from it, be healthier now at 50 than I've ever been in my entire life. And I've had the kidney nearly 20 years. And that's how I've learned how the body is the best machine that's ever been created. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
And what you're saying is he's just written a book that you have to get as well. It's called Death.
Okay.
And it's the title is Death. It says for all those who are going to die.
Okay. And it which is everybody.
Right. And it's sublime because it takes you through so much of the process of what happens to the body, what goes on spiritually. It's just incredible. It's every single page you've got to concentrate because there's just so much information. The greatest gift that I've got from this is that you have to live with death every moment of your day.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you live with death every moment of the day, the past is dying. But if you live with death every minute of the day, you get more involved with life.
Well, I've often said since the transplant that I thought the meaning of life is death. Without death,
yes.
You don't have the motivation. You don't have the reflection. You don't have the nostalgia.
Yes. Yes. And yes. I guess that in COVID, I haven't thought about this before, but as you're speaking, death gets me up every day.
Mm-hmm.
Because right. I want to live life. And right. We're also conscious right now of death. And what's mm-hmm. happening, death in so many different ways, not only people passing away because of COVID, but the death in the morning of a life that we thought we knew, a right. world that we thought we knew, and now we don't recognize anything. You know, COVID has brought so much else. And, you know, when I first came to live in America, which is 4 years ago, I left an incredibly successful career, people that I knew, everyone was a phone call away from me, all of that. And I left it all to come to a new city, a new country. And I was petrified because I thought, how am I going to survive here? I don't know anyone. No one knows who I am. And I've literally had to start from square one, you know, and it's been hugely frustrating, lots of tears happening. And I always just knew, I've always followed through the open doors. It's like, okay, universe, I never planned my career. So looking back at my bio, it's, wow, like when did that happen? But it was really just walking through open doors. And I knew before I even met my husband now, because I moved because I met an expat South African, but he's been here 42 years, was so interesting because before I even met him, I knew that I was going to be with him and that I would be living here. Huh. It was such a knowing. And that's what you're talking about. It goes yeah. into so much of our especially feminine intuition to trust. So even though I didn't know why, and I still don't have all the answers as to why, my work, whatever that is, bringing here is important. And for me to be here is important to retrospect and see, okay, that's what was happening.
I want to go back to the opening the doors, because I find, and I was telling a friend the other day, and I also try to engage in conversations that are more like this, where I've always wanted to, I've always been connect, even as the runt, you know, there's a lot of, there's always been a lot of reflection in my mind about myself, about any abilities I may have on a mental level. I think, like you said, this feminine energy, you can tap into yourself. Like you mentioned, you knew that you're going to marry this man. You knew that you were going to come to the United States. Most women, if they really relax enough into it, focus on themselves, there's a lot of predictions they can make for themselves. There's a lot of things they can sense, they know they're going to be doing. And I've certainly been able to do that. But I think that now that I'm older, especially with this pandemic, I told my friend, it's like the movie Moana, you know, if you've seen it, where in the beginning, when she's the little girl and the ocean is trying to, you know, shows her the shell and tries to kind of slowly bring her out. To me, I've tried to reflect that as the universe. So instead of it being the ocean, it's just, it's almost like this gel of stars that's trying to come and say, okay, this is the way you go. And I said, I'm going to try to live the rest of my life just following, like you said, the open doors, the easy paths. When the paths open up, I'm not going to question anymore or try to control it. I'm just going to walk through it. And you've had the ability to do that, it seems like, for a very long time. So I think a lot of women have a hard time trusting themselves to be able to do that. So did you have to learn to do that, or was that just instinctual your whole life?
It's a really interesting question. That it was very intuitive as a little girl. So I was always the different one in my family. And, you know, you keep referring yourself to as the runt, which I hate, because you were probably the light, you know. And looking back now, I was definitely the light of the family because I was so different. They were all academics and I was in the arts. I was into dancing and acting, and I was at Lee Strasberg on a full scholarship for 3.5 years in LA. But I was always the one who wasn't going to make it because I was arty. And they were all the academics, the doctors, the everything else. And I hated school. And I remember, I come from a trauma childhood, a lot of loss, a lot of death and divorce and no money and a lot of trauma. Never connected with my mother, didn't live with her when I was little, lived with her sister. And there was a lot of trauma. And I created this world that I would venture into and disappear into that was my imagination. And it taught me the most incredible skill, because I realized that when you're in your world and you're imagining and you're creating, you can therefore manifest. And so that was very profound moving through my life and how it held me. And so whereas my family used to say, you're never going to amount to anything because you're just a dreamer, it was my dreams that made me so internationally recognized and successful. Mm-hmm. And the first thing that I did with my children was I taught them to dream, because without a dream, you know, Martin Luther King never said, I have a goal.
Right.
You know,
right.
He said, I have a dream, and everything starts with a dream. What was interesting, when I came to America, I lost that. And so everything was a fight. It was a fight to make friends. It was a fight to learn the system. It was a fight to get known. It was, I joined every networking group. I joined every webinar. And then slowly but surely, I dwindled it down. And I kept thinking, why am I not breaking through? This is not how it's meant to be. And my son has had 3 back surgeries in 3 years from being super fit, super athletic. And it was hugely stressful. And with COVID, I was in lockdown with him in Sydney, Australia for 9 weeks. And my sanity was to go for a walk along Bondi every day and get us something to eat and cook and food and everything. And I picked up a book that I'd bought months ago by Michael Singer called The Surrender Experiment. And I thought, I'm going to have so much time looking after him, let me just take it with me. I'm sure I'll have time to read it. It was sitting next to my bed. You know, those books that make you look so intellectual because they're next to your bed, right?
But yes. You haven't picked
it up. So yeah, this was one of those.
They got dust on them. They
right, exactly.
Cup of tea, but yes, they're there. Yeah, I exactly. had the same. Yes.
So I thought, oh, you know what? I'll read it. I'll have time. And I went for one of my walks and I thought, what is it? Why have I struggled so in America? And then I thought, I never struggled in South Africa, not simply because I am South African, but because I had total trust. I was in the flow of universal energy. I had trust and faith that my journey would open. And when you struggle, you put doors up mm-hmm. and walls up. And I decided I'm not doing it anymore. I'm going to just surrender to what everything is. And I'm going to see how this unfolds. And I got back to the apartment and I picked up the book. And that's exactly what it is.
Wow.
It's about surrendering. And he's incredible. I love his work. He wrote The Untethered Soul as well. Two magnificent pieces of work. And since I came back, things have definitely started unfolding because I've allowed myself to become a part of instead of the struggle and the fight.
Right.
And I'm finding it incredible. Do I get frustrated? Of course I do. I would love to. I love doing the work. So I want to be out there. You know, mm-hmm. I've changed thousands of lives. And you talk about women. I've got a mom's group on a Thursday evening because moms are falling apart. Yes. So it's about helping them facilitate. What are your inner resources? How do you build capacity? Then I give them a treat day, all about taking a pause and smelling the roses. And I literally delivered bouquets of flowers to everyone's doors with a beautiful note, you know. And then one woman came out and she said to me, "Oh, Kim, this is amazing. Thank you for this life-changing experience." So for me to be part, and I said to her, it's such an honor to be a part of someone's positive change in their life, to witness someone embracing their life, their happiness, their joy, their love is a privilege. Mm-hmm. And I've been honored to do that thousands of times. And I'm launching my women's retreat. I normally do it face-to-face over 6 weeks, once a week. And I'm obviously going to be doing this on a webinar. And it's 6 weeks, profound work with a woman. So the first one is, what is your identity as a woman in the world today? Who do you want to be? The second one is all about how much does fear and anxiety stop your potential? Mm-hmm. Third one is, do you live in scarcity or abundance? Because women, myself, and everything that I teach and go through and facilitate, it's a partnership, and everything is what I have lived. Mm-hmm. So it's not theory, it's not cognitive stuff, it's real stuff. And that's why women change so incredibly through this process. Then the next one is, your tapestry of life. What have you created before and what do you want to create moving forward? And it's just, it's profound work. And that's what I want to do. That's what I love, working now with teachers. My son has written books, perfect for your son. It's called Freeing Freddy, the Dream Weaver.
You had met, yeah, we have spoken before and I had written that down and I have it in my Amazon cart. Yes.
Endorsed by Deepak Chopra. And it comes in a set of three. You don't have to buy them all together, but they come as three. So there's the storybook that you can read to your six-year-old as well mm-hmm. as to yourself, because Brent writes in layers. So it depends on your age and your consciousness as to what you're going to take out of it. We use it in corporates. We literally read the story in a corporate workshop. And then it comes with an activity sticker book for your little one mm-hmm. that encourages all those lessons learned. So, for instance, my favorite one in there is a brave mask. And the conversation is then, where did you need to be brave today? So if they come back from school and they're just not feeling so great, did you need to be courageous today? What's going on? And because they've got this mask on, they feel so free to talk. So it encourages the communication. And then there's the workbook for older, so for teens and for yourself. And so we've got a full social emotional learning curriculum for elementary and middle school. And the teachers do a teacher training that takes them through their own process, because how do you teach something you haven't experienced? I love the work that we do. I feel just so privileged to be a part of this. And this is definitely some of the best work that I've been involved with. I've worked with the most incredible teachers, incredible parents to create this.
Well, I wanted to bring up, especially the pandemic, I think is challenging for a lot of people. And I think this is a good time for that type of reflection and evolution. I had a friend who mentioned to me that she sees this pandemic as a cocoon, and that we were caterpillars that crawled into this and needed this, and that we'll come out a butterfly of our choosing. And she mentioned this to me like in April, and I have held on to it since then, because that's what I reflect on in trying to take advantage of this opportunity, because to me, it's an opportunity. So because I have a compromised immune system, I have been home since March, and I understand that I have to do what it takes in order to stay healthy, because I'm one of those that have the underlying condition, right? I can't take the chance to get it. And my son is remote learning. I have enjoyed it. Like, I learned to enjoy the fact that without the pandemic, I would have never been able to do school with my son and to watch him learn. And not only to watch him learn, but to your point, like, to hear the messages that he's given, which is diversity is good. You can do anything. It's okay to be afraid. Like, all these messages we give children, that somehow we lose that messaging as adults, like, that it's still okay to be afraid. It's still, you know, diversity is still good, that you can do anything. But why is it that a six-year-old is receiving that message as just that's, of course, you're going to tell a six-year-old that. But when you're a 30, 40, 50-year-old woman, 60, 70, 80-year-old, why do you not get the same messaging? You know, where was that lost? And so it sounds like when you talk to these women, it's almost like you're bringing out their inner child. Like, it's okay to come back out and to enjoy the world, because that's what the world is meant to be, is enjoyed. And it's, you know, like your experience in America, which is you got into a rut in which it was very combative internally and externally. And then you went back into that flow, which to me is a very childlike thing. So that's one of the things I'm trying to do too with this pandemic, is to not forget my inner child. I even brought a picture of myself at like 3 years old out to like visualize, this is who you're fighting for. This is who you're working for and serving, not just your son, but you at this age. And that's really seemed to help me a lot.
I love, love, love what you're saying. And what I've been saying since COVID, what you said around choice is so important for me, and I bring it up all the time, is that COVID was and is a light. It's like the spotlight that is shining on individuals and on societies and really reflecting back to you. So if you're an anxious or fearful person, it's going to exacerbate that. Mm-hmm. If you are resourceful, it's going to make it even more. So my daughter's lives in Singapore. She works and lives there in a tiny apartment. She was in lockdown for 3 months. She didn't see any of her friends, and she's working full time. She was going crazy, but she's incredibly, incredibly resourceful. So she worked out, okay, I can buy a bicycle and go cycling, because that's what they allowed you to do. And it's the same thing as in society. It's a spotlight on what's going on. And then we have choice as to what to do with that. Mm-hmm. The big thing as a foreigner in a new country, watching America objectively is very interesting.
I know. Every time I talk with somebody who's not from the United States, I feel this urge to apologize, because it's
I think you're in the metamorphosis. I think it's incredible space, you know. I think what's happened politically is incredibly interesting for me, because you know, your president got voted in, you know, and what's going on now, you are voting in new leadership, you know, whether it be Trump or Biden. You know, what it's doing is saying, what country do you want to live in? You know, and I think the same thing goes personally. It's like, what life do you want to live in? And, you know, I have really shitty days some days, you know, wake up and I'm on this roller coaster. I don't know when I'm going to see my kids again. One's in Singapore, one's in Sydney. I want to do my work, so it's all online now, you know. So we all go through these wobbles, and then it's like, okay, what choice do you want to make now?
Mm-hmm. I think that's important. I think for a lot of people, they have those shitty days and then they wallow in them as if that becomes their identity, instead of it you know, to me, I think that when you talk about your body as a machine, I think your emotions are our guidance system. And that if you have the emotions, then it's like, whatever, to me, if you have these negative emotions, it's giving you the idea that something's not right. You're not thinking correctly. You're not doing something correctly. So it's time to make that shift. So to me, I've learned in time that being sad, being depressed, all those things are a signal. It's not a sign. It's a signal to kind of reflect on how you're doing, but it's not like this sign that the universe is out to get you. I think a lot of people find that their depression they want to live in, that their sadness they want to live in, that, oh, well, I give up because now things aren't perfect. Well,
there you go. So you've got two choices in this space. You've got a choice of, well, first of all, your thoughts and your emotions are totally connected. So what you think, you're going to emote. What you emote, you're going to think. Mm-hmm. So it's very important that you understand where your thoughts are landing. It's like, where do you want to land your mind? And often, you know, where we land our mind is going to take us down the rabbit hole.
Right.
You know, and then you're going to know, okay, I'm going down the rabbit hole. Okay, how do I stop this spiral, which is really, really important. And it's really profound, everything that you're saying, because you've got two choices here. Either you can be a victim and go into victim mode and say, poor me, I'm in this terrible state, et cetera, et cetera. Or you can be your own hero. And if you look at life in history or even in yourself, you've had a serious, serious issue. You know, having to have a kidney transplant is no small little thing. You know, it's not like, oh, yeah, I've got acne today, you know,
right.
Or I've got a cold, you know, this is something serious. And you can either go into victim mode, which I'm sure you might have had your days, but generally you are your own hero, and it comes through the way that you speak. And it comes through, as you know, I love I always had behind my desk Gandhi saying, my life is my message. And your life has been your message, you know, no matter what you went through. And so if you look at, for instance, say a Holocaust survivor or something, they worked out, you know, what Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. He's super famous. It's an incredible, incredible book. But he came across two inmates in Auschwitz, and they were just about to commit suicide. They were going to fling themselves onto the electric fence because it was just horrendous, obviously, the conditions in there. And he said to them, what did you want to do in your life? And the one wanted to do something for his daughter. And all of a sudden it gave meaning to his life, and mm-hmm. everything changed. It shifted his mindset. And that's what we do at Free the Mind Co. We transform thought patterns, which therefore develops your emotional intelligence and your love quotient. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've got choices. And the most important thing for me is that you know who you are. It's a journey within all the time. For instance, and I'm so guilty of this, when you feel like a failure, only when you're comparing yourself to someone else.
Right.
And I've done that my whole life because of my journey, and because I wasn't parented. I was parented.
I was about to ask that when you go into those modes, like for me, it's that nobody has my back, because I was the oops baby. I was the youngest by far. And I was very close with my mother, and I had a loving relationship with my father, but it wasn't as close. But they still were very distracted by the older children. And they, I think in their minds, I was the good kid. I didn't need a lot of help. And so they didn't have to provide me that. But my perception was I was being abandoned, right? Right. My go-to when things don't go well for me is, well, you know what? Screw it. Nobody has my back. Like everybody leaves. I was going to ask, not to interrupt, but when people go into those modes, do you think it's something that obviously they have this perception as a child, an ignorant perception that they've never quite been able to resolve?
Yeah. It's so behavioral. Most people don't understand that though. Mm-hmm. What you've just said, most people don't know that. They go into that old behavioral reaction of how they always behaved since they were kids. And now it's not appropriate as an adult. So as an adult, when I feel abandoned or rejected or whatever else, I know the self-talk because I've got the skills and the tools because this is what I do. And this is my journey that I've gone through. And I know what I've put into place that will help take me out of that. And one of the big things is your thought process of how you're thinking about that time in your life. And do you need someone or can you do this yourself? Right. Because at the end of the day, you wake up alone, you go to sleep alone. I mean, I've got the most amazing husband. I love and adore him, right? He's not here. If I'm having a bad day, he's not here. Yes, he's on your cell phone, but he's in his own reality right now. You know, he's making his own life work, which serves us. So it's really important that we learn to stand on our own 2 feet.
And I think, and I'm just going to interject, and I'm so sorry because I think you make, Kim, you're just incredible with all your points. I just want to reiterate that though, because I think for a lot of women, they define themselves by their relationships and they feel protected and they feel, you know, like all these romantic ideas, but at the same time, I think they put too much pressure on their partners, whether it be a man or a woman, to heal them internally when it's their job to heal themselves internally. Wouldn't you
absolutely
agree?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, my story of having so much loss as a child and my mother falling apart and us running with cups of tea to hold her together. And then my father trying to commit suicide when I was 13. And then my stepfather dying when I was 10. My real father dying when I was 14. And all of this going on. And then getting into a really negative marriage situation. And me as a kid looking at these adults and going, like, they don't understand this. They don't know what they are actually doing. And me having to work out, okay, how am I going to live this life? What are the skills and tools that I need to get through this life? And then me having my kids and knowing, hang on, I parented my parents and I parented myself. So when I had my kids, the parenting skills came from me because I was self-parenting my whole life. And then I knew that to parent my children, I was going to have to create a new wheel. I'm super proud of them as to how they've turned out as independent, really self-thinking individuals, mm-hmm. because that's the gift. Because I can't hold them forever because they're adults now. I mean, I had a conversation with my son last night about something that made me feel anxious. I don't like him swimming in the ocean because I'm scared of it, right?
Right.
And he said, Mom, I'm not going to do anything dangerous because I don't want to put myself in danger. You have to allow me to make my own choices without worrying about you. Mm-hmm. And that was such a beautiful thing because I gave them permission, obviously when they were older, I think they were in their 20s already, but to say, that's not my stuff, that's your stuff.
Right. That, I mean, that's very wise of him to be able to say that.
And it's hard. It's hard, Melissa. It's a hard conversation for a parent because you do want to naturally protect your children. Right. And at the same time, it's very selfish because I don't want my children to be hurt because I don't want the pain.
But it's also instinctual too, because that's your job. But you're right. Like, I was fortunate enough to be raised by parents who believed in self-sufficiency. But I have friends whose parents still parent them as if they were children, even though they're well into adulthood, right. which is easy to do as a parent, but at the same time, you're not doing any service to your child by doing that. It goes back to our conversation about death, right? Two things come to mind. One, I know that my son will end up being a grown man who doesn't need his mom all the time. That's the point. The point is that I'm raising a man. I'm not raising a baby. I embrace every moment I have with him because I know this is my time. The baby and toddler years are my time and the adult years are his time and I have to let go. So it's knowing that it ends is why I embrace it so much. And goes back to our conversation about death and COVID. That I think that people's reaction to COVID is probably their same reaction to death, which is the people that ignore it, it doesn't exist, it's not that big a deal, I'm not wearing a mask, as many Americans are doing. That to me, that's the, I don't want to face my mortality. And then people like me, who I have to take a very every precaution, but I'm enjoying the experiences I have now, because my thought is, even if COVID does take me, let's say worst case scenario, I want the people around me, especially my son's memory of me, to not, I'm not afraid. I have lived my life until, and even if I don't die of COVID, whatever takes me, and I learned this from the transplant, is that when death comes to get me, I want to smile knowing that I lived a great life and that I'm not afraid and not upset that death showed up.
That is so beautiful. And, you know, I just wrote down here while you were talking, because 2 points. In The Prophet by Khalil Gibran, I don't know if you know it. I used to keep it
in
my head. It's just so beautiful.
Yeah.
And I used it in the front of one of my books. He says, of your children, they're not yours. They come through you, but they are not yours. And I think that is just so important to understand. The second point, when I came to live in LA, at Lee Strasberg, I was 19 years old, to study. And I remember going to the Bodhi Tree, which is a famous bookstore. Everyone in the spiritual world launched there, from Deepak to this is Shirley MacLaine. And so I had Shirley MacLaine's book Out on a Limb in my hand. It was my first entry into all of this. Mm-hmm. And I was crossing the road and a bus went screaming past me. And I thought, it's like yesterday, I thought to myself, if that bus runs me over now, would I be happy with my life? And my answer was no. Mm-hmm. And from that point on, I always lived my life as much as I possibly could, but very much aligned to my purpose, very much aligned to what was meaningful for me. My son said to me the other day, he said, you know, Mom, generally, you know, people of your age don't want to learn new things and they don't want to have new experiences and they want to just rest and they like retired and whatever else. And he says, look what you're doing. It's amazing. And it was so interesting hearing it from his perspective, because it took me into that. And I went, yes, because that's what life should be.
Right.
There is no timeline that says, well, this is when you should stop.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
well, because— I don't know why we got, I think that we created some kind of false, this machinery mentality of 8 to 5 in a cube and immobile and, you know, just this very impersonal lifestyle that we have created as a society shows that people dream of a time where they're not tied to that. And that's what retirement is. And I think that what's beautiful about your son saying that is that in the future, when he's facing his own age and facing his own, you know, what do I do now? You will be an inspiration for him, because he'll remember, well, you know, mom did this, so I'm going to keep going. And I, you know, like I said, I'm fortunate with my parents and I want to do that for my son, which is, again, both of my parents are gone. They both embraced technology until the end. They both embrace new shows and new movies. Like, my parents never just said, well, I'm too old for that. They never said that. And I really, so when you talk about your son, you're his mentor, because for me, you know, even though instinctually I keep going, I don't give up on myself. And that's been my mantra for, especially since the transplant, but I know instinctually before the transplant and during the transplant, I'm not giving up. They inspired me because of watching them, not what they said, but what they did. And so I think it's wonderful that you have lived your life and knowing not only the thousands of people that you have directly influenced, but there's so many more that you won't be aware of that will be looking towards you for guidance, even after you're gone, by how you lived your life. And that's what everybody should understand, is people are watching you and it's a good thing. And if you live your best life, then you really inspire and connect with so many people.
And Melissa, with all of that said, what comes up for me is people do not understand the impact that they have on others. And that's positive and negative.
Mm-hmm.
They really, and that shows such a lack of self-awareness and lack of consciousness. And I've been a guest lecturer for Arizona State and for Fairfield University, And yesterday Fairfield sent me the survey, and I was having a bit of an off day on the second lecture, and I said, I'm so sorry. You know, I had a bit of a procedure in the morning. I didn't think it would affect me, and it did. And I just wasn't on top of my game. And she said to me, Kim, here's the survey. And I got a 9.2 from all the students. It was absolutely incredible. The behavioral change was just phenomenal, what these students were saying. And I stepped back and I went, gosh, I would never, ever have thought that at all. It's interesting that we don't know necessarily the impact, as you're saying, that we have anywhere. And that's why it's so important to live your best life, because you don't know who you're impacting, let alone yourself.
Even as spiritually connected as you are, you know, it shows that everybody has, like you said, a shitty day, and everybody feels bad. And there's days that you just, you know, everybody looks at each other like, oh, their life is so wonderful, mine's not. No, everybody struggles and everybody overcomes. And for you to even have a day where I didn't just feel well, and you still had this myth in your mind that I am not performing as well, and these kids don't care as much. If I was on my A game, it'd be better. And to understand that you were deceiving yourself, like so many times. And I try to remind myself of this, like, you know, there's theories that life is nothing but, what is it? The fairy tale, life is but a dream, that all this isn't real, that all this is just vapors that you are imagining on your own. And especially fear being the biggest liar or myth of them all, right? And just to remind yourself of that. So in those negative states and those negative moments that you have, especially of self-deprecation, is understanding that you have, again, if you use your purpose as a lighthouse, if you use what you want to be remembered for, it helps kind of go away, you know, dust that mist away. One of the things that I use as inspiration, speaking of purpose, you know, recently with Ruth Bader Ginsburg's death, there was an image that I just loved and am keeping, is of her staff and former staff standing on the steps of the Supreme Court waiting for her body to arrive. So here you have over 100 men and women who have worked as clerks for this judge. And again, this is employees waiting on their boss to arrive. And how many bosses would have 100 employees waiting on their body to arrive, right? So, you know, here's a woman that lived her purpose in the way that she knew best, which is with the law, but she inspired people even indirectly by just being herself. And so upon her death, the biggest show of respect that they could have for her was to be standing outside waiting in line for her to arrive, to be there as a support. And so, I don't know, there's something so impactful about that, showing that she truly lived a life that inspired people that she never even thought about.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and so if you keep that in mind,
yeah.
And that's why I want to keep that image, is I, you know, to be able to live a life where there would be people when I pass to be so touched by my passing that they go out of their way to make all those efforts to be in the spot where I'm going to be and standing at attention. Like, it just chokes me up to imagine to live a life like that. And I think that has been my new goal through this pandemic is, you know, we have been jolted into fear. And what do you do with it? And my thought is, no, it's just going to be gasoline to reinvigorate me to, if I have one person standing there when I die, then I've done my job, right? So that's my goal, is not only for death to come and for me to smile and go willingly, but also to have one person who would show up because they were, there's a loss for them at my passing. I think that's,
you know, you bring up a very important part that I was really astounded when I moved to America, and that's fear and anxiety. Mm-hmm. I come from a country where fear is inherent because we've got such crime, and we've been through a hijacking where my ex-husband was shot for 3 months in a wheelchair. I mean, we've done it, you know. So fear is that protective kind of fear is there all the time. And then I come to a country where it's supposed to be free And yet the amount of fear and anxiety here is off the charts, off the charts. The suicide rate here is unacceptable, right? And suicide, I mean, obviously if you have mental illness and things, it's something different, but generally it's because people don't have the skills or the tools how to cope and live with life. And if you ask people, especially in America, what's your greatest fear or what are you anxious about? No, I'm fine. Because it seems as such a weakness instead of a strength and normal. Humans have fear and anxiety, but the more you shove it down, the less you're able to cope with it. So all the work that we do with Free the Mind Co, and I really hope you do get Freeing Freddy, because you'll see it's all about how do you release that fear and anxiety in a fun, joyful, it's a magical, magical story as well, because it's normal and we have to talk about it. You know, normally I'll throw something and say to someone, what's your greatest fear right now? And they go, oh, it's that immediate catch my breath. I can't share that with you. You know, why not? Because that's what it is. At the moment, one of my greatest fears is how long am I going to have to wait before I see my kids? Mm-hmm. And is it going to be safe? And are they going to be safe? Right. You know, so fear is so normal. And the more we speak about it, the more normalized it becomes. And children need to understand that, because otherwise they are reaching for an expectation that is not human.
I don't know if you felt differently having a son and a daughter, but I also feel a huge responsibility raising a man, especially in this country, because there's this idea for men that weakness is wrong and that vulnerability is wrong. And we have a current administration, a president who just, that's just what he exudes, is tough and bullish. And that's supposed to be what you're supposed, you know, what you're supposed to be. So I find it very important for me to teach my son expression and to teach my son it's okay to be afraid and to teach my son these things, because I don't want to repeat the pattern of, you know, and women obviously fall victim to this in different ways.
I was going to say that. I was going to say girls are taught that they have to cope with everything. I mean, women fall apart, especially now with COVID, because they are not only having to work, a lot of them, they're having to do everything at home. So they're doing the cooking, the chores, they're holding everyone emotionally, and they can't even voice it because they feel that it's not their place to voice it. You know, I think this is very general. People need to understand and really acknowledge the human journey. And the human journey is a challenging one. And it comes with fear and anxiety. Let's face it, fear and anxiety puts us into such a place of discomfort. And often it comes from because we want our life to look different to what it is. So that acceptance is just so important as well. It doesn't mean don't strive for something, but striving is an internal process. It's not external. And I think what happens is that we get caught in the external world of who we should be and how we should be, instead of going within and striving for yourself to be what you want to be.
Again, you can find Kim at freethemindco.com, freethemindco.com. And I just had to end the interview in mid-conversation like I did at the beginning, because literally you have those friends where you can just talk all day, right? And or your conversations just kind of flow in and flow out. And Kim is, it was just so impressive to talk with her. So Kim, thank you for joining the show. And thank you for being part of She Persisted. And I think, you know, some of the things we talked about, you have to get in those deep conversations. And you know, I had a conversation with another friend who basically just shared that she's of a certain age where she just needs those kind of conversations. I mean, I personally think we all need those conversations a lot, but as women, the older we get, I do believe that, you know, we, to be inspired, to be touched, to be motivated, I think that we need more. We need more depth. So many times I think that we're afraid to approach depth. I mean, just like Kim and I discussed when it comes to people who handle the pandemic and handle their own mortality, you're either intimidated by it and you don't want to have anything to do with it, or you just, you need to face it. You need to feel it. And the same with these conversations, these deep conversations. So it's interesting how I find that a lot of my friends, this is kind of how we discuss things now. I don't know. It's hard to explain, but there's a need for more intellectual stimulation and more heartfelt stimulation. As my mother would put it, she didn't like silly talk, as she would call it, where it's just, if you don't have anything substantive to say, then she didn't want to be engaged in the conversation. And I now realize and relate to her far more than before. So I just enjoy having these conversations with these women. And What Women Want, again, is the networking group that I joined for that purpose, to network with women from around the country. There's chapters everywhere. And I'm not endorsing them. They didn't pay me to do this. This is, you know, I actually paid to be a member of that group. So I'm just finding that, you know, these past few weeks and these upcoming weeks, I'm talking with women I've met through that group. And it's just really impressive. And I think it's an inner journey for me, because like I've mentioned, I am giving myself a chance to do something different. Now, is it going to look like something different? Am I going to, you know, I'm still in media. So is it really different, or is it the way I go about it different, or is it just the way I experience it and appreciate it different? I don't know. I find that in my life now that it's more of following the path that opens up for me rather than me trying to carve a path and trying to take too much control of something. I mean, that's another common theme that has come up in conversation with me and my friends, is how much control are we trying to take in a situation, and how much are we allowing it to just kind of happen and us more wrangle it, you know, more corral it, you know, rather than try to manipulate it, if that makes sense. And that's where I'm at. Instead of panicking and thinking I got to control it so that I feel safe, so that everything's okay. Well, guess what? We're in an environment where we're learning everything's not safe and everything's not okay. And what are we going to do about it? And that is focus on the good and see what good things are happening. There was a former colleague of mine I saw on Facebook. He recently got married. I think it was the weekend before, like last weekend. He posted online that this was the best day of his life. And I remember thinking, now that's what you focus on. Here is someone who, in the middle of a pandemic in 2020, the year that we all can't wait to get out of, he has experienced the best day of his life. And there are people whose babies are being born this year, and they're experiencing one of the best days of their life. And there are a generation of kids whose birth dates are going to be 2020. So it's important to remember that it's easy to complain about what's happening now, but to focus on the fact that there are people, and you may be one of them, that this, for them, may be one of the most important and best years of their life, despite what's going on. So there's always something good happening, even when bad things are happening. And you have to remember that. And I was truly, truly happy for my former colleague, because I thought, good for him and good for his wife. And then also, thank you for reminding us all that there are great things happening in 2020. And great things are happening to you, whether you are staying in whatever you're doing and you found that perfect niche, whether it's your family or your business or your employee or your employers or whatever you're doing with your life, then I think that's wonderful, and you just make it even better. And if you're somebody who's transitioning, then guess what? It's going to get better, because you will find that niche. Whatever it is, be good to yourself, be your own best friend, and give yourself a high five. Like, give yourself that congratulations. You know what? You're doing great. Like I've mentioned, you came into this world with nothing, not even a stitch of clothes on you, and look where you are. You're doing great. And I hope you have a fantastic week, and we will talk next time. Bye-bye. Say, this is Mr. Carter.
This is Mr. Carter.
And you're listening to...
Listen to
my mom.
My mom
on She Persisted.
Just from 6:00.